Guidelines to Order. Today is February 1st, 2007, and on our agenda today, we're going to continue our discussion of the policy guidelines. At our last committee, we went through a letter that Ramona had written back to Bruce Bishop and outlined some areas that needed further clarification within the guidelines, and we added some additional items that we all felt needed to be clarified as well. And because our time is limited and we can't get through all of it in one day, I've tried to break them down into chunks that we can tackle in an hour. And so for today, the items that I hoped that we could cover would be dinner with the governor and elected officials. Let me find my notes to self in here. Oh, snack. That today we will talk about snacks. What is a snack? How do you determine the value of a snack or food? The governor and elected officials in relation to eating with them, what the definition of incidental entertainment is, and also what the guidelines mean in terms of political party events that might be sponsored by the Democratic Party of Oregon or the Oregon Republican Party, things like the Dorchester Conference or the summit in Bend. And I think that is important because some of those events are coming up. No problem. And so since we're all here, do you have the materials?
Chair, we have passed out your two-sided document, one is dinner with the governor and other elected officials, and the flip side then is their questions about snacks and others. And
great.
Everybody should have that, and any additional ones should be in the back.
Great. And so what we have here to start, and just to recap, today we're going to try to tackle snacks, what are they and how do you know what they're worth, the governor and elected officials, incidental entertainment, and political party events like Dorchester or the Democratic Party of Oregon summit.
Do we add world peace to that?
Sure. We'll have to see whether or not peace fits within our house guidelines or not. So what I have for snacks and the dinner with the governor or other elected officials is a little sheet to guide our conversation that have some options of the directions that we could go with these. However, these are not all inclusive, so if you have other options, other roads that you'd like to go down, please toss them out, but this is a place to start the discussion. So I'd like to start us off with the question of what is a snack? There are two ways that we could go with this, and this is an issue that many members have had as they are at events trying to figure out how the rules apply to the food that might be offered. For example, if it's pastries and coffee in the morning at breakfast time and you're eating that in lieu of breakfast, is that a snack or is it breakfast? Or since it's under $10, does it not really matter? So there's the two ways that I've put here that we could go is first we could determine that snacks are light fare that are often offered informally, such as cookies, M&Ms, chips, pretzels, popcorn, crackers, and so forth, and that professionally prepared appetizers or restaurant-prepared meal fare, such as pancakes, oatmeal, hot dogs, hamburgers, and salads, are not snacks. Or we could just determine that there's a distinction between a substantial meal and snacks or modest meals on the other side, and to just eliminate the reference to beverage and snacks and just use the $10 limit that's already embedded in the rules. And so in the guidelines, it would change to members may not accept from individuals, businesses, or organizations that have business before the legislature private restaurant meals costing more than $10. And with that, I would open it up. Oh, and it appears that Ramona has a clarification to make.
Okay. Madam Chair, my name is Ramona Kennedy, and I'm Chief Clerk of the House. And as parliamentarian, I've been designated to try to provide some guidance, not only to those who have interest before the legislature, but also to the members. And I would just like to let you know that as I've been going through many, many invitations, trying to give them clarification as to what is a snack, what's not a snack, how does that all work, it has been somewhat complicated. And so I just give you that as sort of a reference point in my responsibility of trying to wade through this to try to provide guidance to everyone. So I'm not going to necessarily weigh in as which would be the best way to go, but just to let you know, the way it is right now is somewhat problematic in that if there is a reception or something scheduled where not all 60 members are included, it does become somewhat problematic in defining even beyond maybe what you find in option A as whether it qualifies or not.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson, Representative Barnhart, do either of you have druthers on which road to go down or a proposal of a different way to define snacks?
Madam Chair, I think that when we start listing, I mean, either one would actually work, except that when you start listing, then now we're asking for additional clarification. Does this include Wheat Thins? You know, because Wheat Thins are not on your list, and, you know, and so I think that a more generic approach, like under $10, is probably the way to go, because then what about small hamburgers?
Finger food. Sliders.
Yeah, so I think that using the dollar amount is a clearer way to deal with it, and it lessens the likelihood of having to have further clarification.
Representative Barnhart?
I agree.
So it sounds like we have a consensus. Because we are an unusual committee and we don't have bills, we don't actually vote. We strive for consensus here. And so perhaps you, Ramona, would take that as clarification. And perhaps as we go through these clarifications, if you would be willing to draft these things into words so that we can communicate it to other members and the lobby as we make these clarifications, that would be very helpful.
Madam Chair, members, I appreciate that clarification. That will make my life a lot easier and everyone involved. And I will draft, after this meeting with review, I will draft some words and try to circulate that to everyone who's interested, particularly the members, that we've sort of come to that agreement that $10 and under will be defined as a snack and beverages in that, gift guidelines.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. And with that clarification, the next question becomes important. How do you determine the value of a snack? So some members have talked to me, and I've certainly had this question as well. If you are attending a reception, can you consume food? How do you know whether or not it's over the $10 limit? And if you are asking what the cost is that person giving you the cost of the food, or are they letting us know the total cost per head at the reception, the room rental, the catering fee, the food cost, and the labor, which is how people tend to break those things out? Or alternately, is it based on the consumption of the individual? So the room might be rented, you go to the reception, and you have a couple of meatballs and a piece of celery, probably under $10, that's okay? Or is that actually valued at the total cost divided by the number of people there of hosting the event? So with that question, there are three options here. The last one is not mutually exclusive of the others, of course. But option A, the legislature should contact the host or sponsor of the event to find out the total cost per head of the reception or event. And the legislator should then write a personal check for her share if the amount exceeds $10. Option B, the legislator carefully limits her consumption of food she reasonably believes to have a value of to that which she reasonably believes to have a value of less than $10, and the value is not based on what is offered, but rather what is consumed, and that only the value of the food is considered in the calculation, and room rental rates are excluded. Option C, the legislator can attend the event and choose not to eat and not be in violation of the rule. Ramona, do you have any clarifications before we begin our discussion on this issue?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I think that the individuals who have contacted my office and who have an interest or business before the legislature have been very, very responsible in ensuring basically as we've moved forward through this session to include everybody to receptions. However, there are those receptions where maybe in your district you might be invited to something unique only to your area. And I guess that, you know, we can try to get lost in the detail. And certainly if that's where you want to go, we can try to manage that. But I also think that there's some sense of responsibility here for each member to sort of gauge that. I don't believe that the original intent, at least from what I've read and what I've heard is that the original intent would also include the room rental and any of the, you know, any of the services or individuals' additional fees other than just the food itself. I would be hard pressed to consume more than $10 in food in any one reception. However, if someone were to partake of many beverages, they might get over that limit depending on whether they're serving soda or whether they might be serving an adult beverage. But I do think at some point in time we need to look to the legislators and trust that they understand what the intent of the rule is, that they take responsibility for that, and that we not try to, you know, get so involved with the detail that we are micromanaging every single reception. They may have an opportunity to attend, particularly if it's not where all members are included.
So thank you, Ramona, for that plea for simplicity. Representative Barnhart, do you have thoughts on this issue?
I think that that makes sense to me. Recognizing that all of the things that we're discussing today are related to non-excluded events. That is, the organization has to have business before the legislature. Not all members were invited for one of the other exclusions. And so some of the issues that may come up in meetings in the district may be excluded because of one or more of those exceptions. Having said that, I think it's clear that if I go into a room to hold a meeting, nothing is offered except a glass of water, regardless of the room rental, regardless of the amount of the room rental, I'm not in violation of the rule. Because there's nothing in the rule about room rentals. And so that being the case, then I think the analysis that the clerk has made is right, that you would not consider the value of anything that we normally wouldn't consider just because a snack was offered. And that would be anything that we normally would not consider. Not just room rental, there may be other costs too. That a person organizing a meeting might pay, but that we wouldn't consider because they're not considered in our rules. And therefore, I agree that the issue a legislator ought to be paying attention to is the value of the snack food itself, rather than any other item. And that has also the benefit of simplicity. You don't have to know any of the details at that point. You can make a rough and ready estimate and probably be pretty close on your own. And we would expect, I think one of the things the speaker said to us in talking about these issues is that he expects legislators to be self-policing on these kinds of matters, and that we weren't expecting that Ramona was going to have to go and figure out what the value of one Swedish meatball was.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Richardson.
I agree.
Great. We are a very consensus-building committee. I also agree with that. I think that it's important for us to be able to attend events in our community without burdening our hosts with doing substantial calculations as to the cost of their meatballs. So it looks like we've settled on option B. Ramona?
Okay. Option B? Good. I just want to make sure that, you know, we understand that it is self-policing, that the legislator has to take responsibility. And not necessarily, you know, that we have to get some sort of sense about how much they're paying for the food and, you know, that divided by, but that there needs to be some responsibility taken by each legislator to know basically when they've, you know, hit that level of probably over and beyond $10 and either cease from consuming anything else or making an effort to at least reimburse the host.
And one additional comment, if I may, not completely germane, but for some of us this will probably be useful from the standpoint of session weight gain or the prevention thereof.
Yes, Representative Richardson.
As we consider these things, I think it's just important that we consider the spirit of the law and not necessarily the letter of the law.
Correct.
So we don't need to get, you know, a certification that this snack does not exceed $10. The goal is to have less appearance that there is influence being purchased. And so, you know, we understand that. And so we need to have the, just respect the maturity of legislators to understand that and to just limit their, what they're doing so that there's not a question that they're supping at the table of those who want to have influence.
Thank you, Representative Richardson.
And
I think that
and may I add that is the key to all of these rules.
Yes.
And I appreciate, Representative Richardson, you're bringing it up, because that is, of course, what we're about. Mm-hmm. And if we remember that, I think we're likely to make recommendations that work.
Thank you both. Well, if we turn over, we're on to item two, which is dinner with the governor and or other elected officials. In the materials that we received last time, one of the clarifications that Ramona made was that under the current guidelines, we would be out of order if any of us were to be invited to dinner at Mahonia Hall and consumed that dinner if the governor had not prepared that himself. So I've outlined here several options for the consideration of the committee. The first is do not change the guidelines. If attending dinner at Mahonia Hall, legislators can either write a check to cover the cost of their food or the governor can cook. Option B, specifically exclude the governor from the guidelines. Option C, specifically exclude the governor, statewide elected officials, including the congressional and Senate delegation from the guidelines. Option D, generally exclude all elected officials, federal, state, and local, from the House guidelines. And this came from the federal rules. Adopt the federal guidelines, which exclude all elected officials and colleges and universities from the House guidelines, or other options that you may have. House guidelines, according to the Wall Street Journal article, I should clarify.
Well, a question. Everything except A requires a change in the guidelines, doesn't it?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, right now, I think what we are now trying to help define,
yes,
although we may not completely be there yet, is who has business before the legislature. Okay, is the governor an individual who has interest or business before the legislature? Does your statewide elected officials, does your local officials, and in a sense, does the universities and colleges? I have passed out, Madam Chair, to the members a legis brief that comes from the National Conference of State Legislatures, The Maze of Lobbying. And I've also asked for additional information from NCSL and also from some of the states that are now having had some guidelines under their feet for over a couple of years of how they've sort of sifted through all of this and sort of where they've ended up. And as you can see from the article, that it runs the gamut. And I really think that it depends on where this committee would want to direct us initially as far as elected officials are concerned, and whether or not, because they are also our elected officials and representing a constituency, that what they bring to the legislature as an interest is another view on, that is based on their constituency. And so I think you have several options here that you could look at that might help. But I also think that as you look at those, I would also want some direction as to whether that trickles down, whether it is the governor that you can have dinner with, or whether as his agents, in this case, agency heads, etc., also fall within that guideline. I think we can take an initial step, hopefully today, to help clarify that, but I think we'll be revisiting, and further defining who has business as we move through these meetings. And so I think that it's important to start this process, and this is the first part of that process, as far as who is it that we're going to define as having business before the legislature.
Thank you, Ramona. And on the issue of having business before the legislature, that is the big one that we need to clarify. Since these meetings are scheduled between other committee hearings, I spoke with Ramona and wanted to get today's to the ones that are most pressing for members right now, but we will schedule a full committee hearing so we can have that 45 minutes to talk specifically about that issue of who it is that has business before the legislature. It may be that this is an issue that needs to move to become part of that discussion, and I'm open to the guidance of both of you. Representative Richardson?
Considering this, and again, the purpose of these changes and the kind of example we want to set, I would think that to just exclude or just make an exception for the governor is not, I mean, that doesn't fall into what we're really trying to do. I don't think that's a good idea. So it ought to be expanded. If it's okay for the governor, then it ought to be for others. And I would think that any official who's elected by the people he may have an interest, but he's not a lobbyist, and that we ought to have the right to meet with county commissioners or mayors. That doesn't go into things beyond that. But I think that it would be a rational decision to say if that we would exclude from these restrictions those that have been elected by a vote of the people, and that, you know, I think that could be statewide.
Thank you, Representative Richardson. Representative Barnhart.
And just to clarify that would include also school boards and
include school boards, but
soil
not
and water conservation district members and other elected bodies. I'm just making up group of fire district board.
Okay, you bring up a good point. You know, I was thinking higher level. I was thinking municipal is what I was thinking.
I think as a reality, if I could simply add to that, it seems that it would be unusual for people to consider it an impropriety for us to meet with a fire district board member.
Of course, we can always meet. We're talking about violating rules as far as food and those kinds of things.
Right. I had a meeting a few days ago with a fire district board member or a city councilor in my city. We had our lunch together. Now, I paid for my own lunch because we hadn't had this conversation yet. But I don't think I would ask them to pay for my lunch anyway, even if this rule were not in place. Because, of course, they work on a completely voluntary basis, and there's no provision in the city budget to pay for those kind of things. So that might be a non-issue. If we simply said elected officials, that may actually deal with the issue.
And I also think that it would be unusual that another elected official would offer to pay for any of our meals. I think the places where it might come up more often would be with local government. If you're going to a taxing district meeting or a meeting of county commissioners and you're working over the dinner hour and there's pizza or sandwiches that come in, the ability for members to participate and consume that food. I know the state treasurer, one of the questions that came up, he was doing an orientation to the State Department of Treasury for freshman legislators, and in order to be in compliance with the rule had broken out the grocery list by head, and I don't believe that that is what the spirit of the rule was. I think that it's good for us to be encouraging communication between the branches of government, from state, local, federal elected officials.
I could argue it either way, but I really think that if you're an elected official, that is a rational dividing line. We're not talking about trips to Tahiti, you know.
No, we're not.
About a lunch or something like that. So I would have no problem with proposing that there be a change in that. Okay. It not apply to elected officials.
And I believe then that that's option D, generally exclude all elected officials, federal, state, and local, from the House guidelines. Some consensus on that?
I agree.
Great.
That's a very easy dividing line to make. You're either an elected official or you're not, and it's pretty easy to figure that out. And the administration becomes pretty simple then, doesn't it?
Madam Chair, members, yes, absolutely. I welcome the simplicity again. And I would suggest, although I've not been, involved as you have been with your local governments or your city governments, both county and city, but my guess is because they are voluntary, chances are they haven't picked up the tab very often. And so I don't think that we have a big issue there. I will then, at this point, however, make the clarification that that does not necessarily mean that if, in fact, the county hasn't paid lobbyists, that then also is included, that they are still subject to the rules. But it's only the elected officials themselves, and only them, that this rule does not apply with apply to. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, and another issue was just raised, and that is the question of whether an elected official who is also a lobbyist is acting, what character they're acting in. If you're a member of a school board, but you also work as a lobbyist. In fact, recently we had a person who was a member of an electric utility board and also a lobbyist. And I would say that you wouldn't exclude them from the lobbyist category simply because they are an elected official when they're
lobbyists
when they're working as when they have their lobbying hat on. If we're working on issues involving the electric utility, that would then their elected official hat would be on, and it'd be a different issue.
And I think that this again comes to what both of you spoke to quite eloquently earlier, which is that we need to trust our colleagues to use some good self-policing and common sense and carrying out these guidelines.
I'd like to speak on that though. If a person is a registered lobbyist, they're in a different category.
That excludes them.
They're in a category, and it, to say you're not going to be acting like a lobbyist is there's, you know, I saw the person, they were doing this, it looks like a violation because they're with a lobbyist.
Yeah.
I would think that if they're a lobbyist, then they're excluded from yeah. any, I mean, they, the rules are subject to them regardless of what hat they might be wearing because of the choice of profession they made. And so at that instance, if it's a school board, they'd better have somebody else be meeting with the legislator so that there's no question of propriety.
You know, on second thought, I agree with that. Again, it's simple. Who's a lobbyist and who isn't is also simple. I mean, in terms of the people who are registered, that makes a lot of sense to me. And, of course, getting back to your original point, of what is it that we have these rules for anyway,
yes.
That makes sense.
It does.
That makes sense. And I appreciate that that shift from what I said. I agree.
Thank you. So we're now on to number three, which...
So just a moment. So we're talking about elected official, unless that elected official also happens to be a lobbyist, in which case they fall under the other category.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. The next item is one we talked about in detail at our first meeting, was incidental entertainment, and we just need to provide that clarification to Ramona officially. The question around incidental entertainment was, is incidental based upon the quality of the performance, or is incidental based upon the relationship of that performance to the event that you're attending? And we had... My understanding was that we had come to the conclusion that if you go to a dinner and the focus is the dinner or the meeting and someone sings, whether that's a third grader or Nora Jones, that entertainment is incidental.
That was my understanding as well.
And the only thing I would add to that, I agree with what you said so far, and the only thing I would add to that is that if the event were billed as the great opera singer or whatever, and there happened to be snacks in there... the event would be would not the entertainment would not be incidental.
Correct.
If instead the focus of the event was some other issue, and that person happened to be there and provide some entertainment, that would be different. That would come under the incidental requirement rule. And I think it's a rough and ready kind of judgment that legislators have to make as they do their work.
And I appreciate the opportunity to not need to tell someone that their entertainment is incidental.
Yes. yes. I was going to say that if we'd adopted a different guideline around the lobbyist elected official distinction, the one I'd originally proposed, then we would encourage a lot more competition for some elected positions. Having adopted the rule that we have, that we are adopting, that will not come up.
Yes, Ramona.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, last time we met, basically there was some, what I felt, very clear direction in the entertainment subject area, and that it was basically seen that if a ticket or a fee had to be charged, whether it was by a public person or anybody else, and that you were being comped for your attendance to that, that would be then considered entertainment. And with all due respect, I kind of appreciated that clarity. And so, again, as we move a little bit back from that, saying, you know, that we need to make sure that the reason that you're attending this event is for purposes of, you know, some work, then at what level is that line between work and entertainment? And that becomes much more gray to me in making those clarifications. If somebody were to ask me, again, I appreciate the fact that we are now putting some of the responsibility on the members themselves to kind of make that choice. However, I do think it's pretty safe to say that if a ticket or a fee is going to be charged to anyone else, then it clearly is entertainment and it's not incidental.
Although I would, the clarification that I would make, many of us were at the Oregon Business Summit in January, and the day was about business. There were many people that had their tickets that were comped for that day. I believe all legislators were attended. So I suppose that could fall under the exclusion rule. But say that everybody wasn't invited. The day was about economic policy. And in the middle of the day, as a tribute to a former board member, there was a performance by an organization that was a professional performance organization. There was a violinist and a dance. It was not advertised as part of the program, but a ticket was charged in order to come to the event as part of that day. I believe that entertainment, even though a ticket was charged for participation in that full day's events, that entertainment was very high quality, but it was incidental to the rest of the day.
And Madam Chair, members, I think you now have just described where I find myself almost daily. And I would suggest that you have already made a determination that if the public can buy a ticket, you can be comped that ticket for purposes of, you know, different dinners, etc. That's how it was explained to me. It's not that you have to pay the value of that ticket, but that, you know, again, there is going to be dinners, and that has to do with meals, okay? And they were, and the example that was given to me is the Portland City Club. You know, you pay for coming to those, but you could get a comped ticket to that because the event is open to the public. And so again, as you look at the various events that are happening out there, i.e. the summit, I believe was available to persons that wanted to purchase a ticket, you could have received a comped ticket. And that would have been legitimate. And now the entertainment is only secondary for the reasons you really even got that ticket.
Right.
And so I wouldn't have even taken under consideration entertainment at that point in time. Okay. That was removed from that. I would have put the test to it at the get-go of saying, could the tickets be bought by the public? And if they could, then you could be comped. Is that correct?
Yes.
And let me ask a question first. I think that that's true for events that are informational, but all entertainment is excluded. So even the Shakespeare Festival, for instance, anybody can buy a ticket to go to the Shakespeare Festival, but as I understand the rules, which exclude entertainment, nobody could comp a house member's ticket to see a Shakespearean play. However, if I understand incidental entertainment in the way that we've just described it, if I was invited to a program being put on by my local school district about theater arts and it was information, and as part of that, they had a graduate that I'm making this up as I go along, a graduate that had gone on to work for the Shakespearean Festival come in and read a sonnet, I would think that that would be incidental, even though in another setting I might pay a ticket in order to see that same individual perform.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if I followed you all the way through that, but yes, I think you're correct. Again, I would believe that the only purpose for going to the Shakespearean play was for entertainment only, and that would follow under the rule of tickets or fees. However, again, we go back to whether or not the entertainment is incidental or not, and I wouldn't take it under consideration that the reason that you would have had to buy the ticket to the summit was so that you could hear the entertainment. The reason you were comped to the ticket was because it was educational and available otherwise.
Okay. Representative Richardson?
I think that we're getting somewhere. Again, if it's incidental to the purpose, then it's not a problem. but where it says entertainment, would it be exclusion if there's entertainment made available to the public on the same terms as the legislators, I don't see that as meaning the public could buy a ticket and therefore the legislators could be comped a ticket, because now it's not the same. But if there's a performance and everybody can come for free, even though normally you might have to pay, but they may say Friday is, you know, is just free night for the folks, then we could go and we wouldn't be in violation because the public's not having to pay and neither are the people, neither are the legislators. And so I think that that means if the legislators are attending on the same basis as the public, then there's not a problem. But as soon as it's preferential, now there is a problem.
I think that's the intent of the rule and of the guideline. The point of the guideline, we have to remember, is, again, getting back to Representative Richardson's comment much earlier, that the point of the rule is to avoid the appearance of impropriety, if I can use the old legal term. Okay. And what we're trying to get at is a lobbyist buying tickets and taking a legislator to a sporting event or to a concert and have the appear to the public that the purpose of that is to influence legislator's behavior. And that's sort of the end thing that we're trying to prevent. The other end is the example that the chair gave of the incidental music that occurred at lunchtime during the summit. As you get closer to one end or the other, the answer becomes more obvious. But I think we've hit the right issues. The main thing, of course, is not to have anybody think that it's okay because of the way we've written these rules or the way we've written the interpretation, that it's okay for them to accept a ticket from a lobbyist to attend a sporting event or a concert that other people are paying to attend.
Thank you. Does that give you the guidance, clarification, and feedback that you need?
Madam Chair, members, I think so.
Great. Thank you.
We may want to revisit this a little bit as we start putting some ink on the paper.
All right.
But I think that it gives me a starting point to give some examples of what's appropriate and what wouldn't be appropriate.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ramona. Our last item for today are political party events, things like the Dorchester Conference, the Democratic Party of Oregon summits, National Republican Committee, National Democratic Committee. Members often, elected officials often are offered scholarships to participate in events that are party development events for either party. We have our statewide conferences, conventions, etc. And this is something that is raising some questions among members. Representative Barnhart.
Well, this is perhaps a little bit difficult, because when you think about it, one of the things that all legislators do, unless they're actually nonpartisan, is participate as members of a political party, and they're involved certainly informally, but. But in real terms, it's part of the obligation of a legislator to be involved in the political process. And because we have a partisan system, that includes the political parties. I wouldn't go so far as to say that that's part of the official duties of a legislator, because that would imply that the state could spend money there. And, of course, we've got a very clear rule that doesn't allow that. On the other hand, so perhaps the right approach to this is to say that political parties, by definition, just as we've said about elected officials, political parties by definition don't have business before the legislature, even though clearly they take positions on political issues routinely, and they try to influence the votes of people on those political issues. Now, I don't know whether that's the correct conceptualization or not, but I think it may be a beginning point for a conversation about it. I'm very cognizant of the fact that legislators are expected to be involved in these kinds of events. And our electoral success depends upon it, to some extent. And some legislators are not in a position where they can afford to pay for those kinds of events out of their own pockets. And I would not want to exclude those legislators from normal participation in party activities. So I think we need to figure out a way to make sure that that doesn't happen. Also, to get back to the basic issue, what is it that what is the appearance of impropriety, or is there an appearance of impropriety? I submit that in this case there isn't, and that's the basic point that we come back to, the touchstone that we come back to on all the rules and all the guidelines.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. Representative Richardson.
I struggle with this one a little bit because the rules that we have been focused more on exceptions that are not focused on a specific political party but are on general informational training. Even examples that are given, you know, I still don't know what PNWER is, but I know it's CSG and NCSL is, and I assume ALEC also fits in, and because these are organizations that anybody could go to, all 60 legislators could go to it, and they are informational in purpose and training, but there's a broad variety of subjects that will be dealt with. As soon as we start talking about political parties, now we're talking about a real focused thing that is not neutral in its intent, and it's not open for all legislators. And so I think what we're redoing, we're essentially rewriting the rule to expand in a way that wasn't originally intended. I read the comments that have been proposed by our chief clerk as far as Dorchester is concerned, and I like the analysis. I think it's reasonable, not because it's Dorchester, but because it's a non-profit. Anybody can come who wants to, even though most Democrats probably would not want to, but I've been there when there have been Democrats. I've only been to two of these in my life. But one of them, there was a Democrat senator that came, and he was welcome. This is it's a kind of an interesting organization there, and a lot of discussion, a lot of debate goes on. And since it's not focused on any kind of a closed door policy at all, you know, I was fine with all of it, even to the back, the last one, which says there would be a violation if you're talking about a closed party where there's going to be food and so forth, but not everybody's invited to that. It becomes very restricted because now it becomes no longer the people's work. And so I think that I would probably have to give some more thought to whether or not I would want to recommend that we change the rules from what their original intent has been, and that is that it be something that everyone could go to, even though there may be, you know, a bent to it. At least it's open for everyone. I'm not real comfortable just saying, you know what, let's include policy or let's include parties, because maybe candidates or legislators can't afford to go back to the RNC convention. And I mean, where does it end if we exclude them? Then now it becomes a non-legislative exemption that we just choose to do because we happen to be in two parties that could afford to do this. If I were part of the Green Party or the Constitution Party, I might be saying, no, this is no fair because we don't have the money to get that kind of training from a national organization that you do, and so what you're really doing is just promoting the further entrenchment of the two-party system against expanding it. Mm-hmm. And so my own thought is that I would prefer not to go there without having seriously thought it through further.
So would it be possible, even when you raise the issue of the RNC National Convention, and we'll probably have a couple of those in the next couple of years, the DNC National Convention, if legislators were to attend, not as legislators, but as leaders in their political party, would they be excluded by the guidelines, or is that more of a campaign activity?
I guess it would depend on who's, if they have and items before the legislature. So, I mean, that's what Reverend right. Barnhart said, and that's the initial consideration is, does this organization, group, or individual have issues before the legislature? And if not, then you don't even have to go there. Right. You don't have to worry about it.
Madam Chair, members, I'd like to weigh in just a little bit here as you have been discussing this, and I haven't thought a lot about it, but it goes back to, do these organizations really have business before the legislature? And I would suggest that you can go to your conferences, whether it's state or federal, and they may have a platform that is adopted by the majority of those individuals that are part of that process, but I don't believe that they then bring those platforms and lobby the legislature to, you know, do something and move forward those subject areas. I think that it's sort, and I speak only from history, but I do remember years back when there was a, and I look at the Democratic Party, and I say this respectfully, but where the Democratic State Party was far more liberal than the members that were serving in the legislature. And I would suggest that a lot of the members of the legislature never even attended those state party events. And I'm not sure that then the party itself came to the legislature to lobby that platform. And so I would suggest you may want to look at this a little bit differently and look at it. Do they really have business before the legislature, except for the fact that they've just taken some positions on certain issues, but not having come as an organization? And that's where I'm sort of drawing the line right now. If the organization or the individual or the business does not have a concerted effort as that organization, business, or individual to come and actually lobby on a particular issue, I'm suggesting they don't have business before the legislature. And so you may want to just think of it in a little bit different terms than the fact that not everybody's included. But, you know, do these individuals really come here once they've adopted, you know, their platforms and then try to push that platform through? And you guys probably, I mean, you members can probably answer that question better than I.
Thank you, Ramona. I think that makes a lot of sense. So that completes our list of activities for the day. I think on that issue, it's clear based on your analysis that individuals that are members that are trying to decide whether or not they can attend Dorchester, they can go. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, I've heard back from each one of you as far as the letter that I had crafted, and I have gotten acceptance by all three of you, so I will forward that letter to the Dorchester Board, and I appreciate your input. Before we adjourn, though, I have a couple questions that I would like clarification from, if that's possible, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I've gotten a question that's somewhat pressing in that several of the members who are appointed officially by the Speaker of the House to participate on a board or commission, i.e., it could be the Commission on Women, it could be, you know, everything back to the Oregon Law Commission. But during those meetings, there is meals being offered. And I have sort of come to the determination that although those boards and commissions obviously come and try to, you know, lobby, particularly because most of them are funded through general fund dollars or other fund dollars, that they may have an interest, but as the member is part of that commission and working, that they should be able to partake in the meal that is being provided because it's a working meal. And I just would like clarification from the committee if I'm on target there.
I think that sounds reasonable. Representative Richardson, Representative Barnhart?
We don't have a specific exception for the performance of their official duties, but it seems kind of nutty if we don't assume that that is sort of built in. I probably shouldn't say it that way, should I? But
it's difficult in definition.
Yeah. I mean, if the Speaker appoints someone, we have many, many boards and commissions. Legislators attend as non-voting members, by appointment from the Speaker. And for some of them, maybe all of them, they get per diem.
That is correct.
And whatever it is that the commission is doing, they're expected to attend. I mean, the board is doing, they're expected to attend. And business occurs during those meal times as well as other times during the events. I think we have to figure out a way to exclude those from the limitation.
I think that your comment about, Madam Chair, and I think the comment about if per diem is paid, that eliminates stretching the rules to be ad hoc committees and other things. And so I think that would be, for the time being, let's test that and say that if it's an event where per diem is paid, then you're doing official legislative duties and these guidelines would not apply as far as meals are concerned.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because I do believe that is true. And I believe that, you know, and I say this, and I'm preaching to the choir right now, and I don't mean to be preaching, but the fact of the matter is your hours are long, and sometimes the only times these meetings can be scheduled is over a noon hour or over a dinner meeting. And so it just seems only reasonable to me that you would be able to participate like any other member on that commission or board and be able to consume any foods. I don't believe that the intent of this rule was to negate that possibility.
I think that's right. And I should say for the record that currently I don't even have a potential conflict on this one because I'm not on any of those boards and commissions right now.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. And I assume that this would spill over as well. There was the question from the Judiciary Committee about whether they could eat the box lunch while they were at the prison on their field trip. Other committees will be going out into the field. That same definition in Ramona, within the scope of Ramona's good judgment.
I would think that, so now we're expanding again, we're saying per diem, would per diem always be paid in that instance? Or, you see, we're getting per diem every day.
Right now,
so
we are.
Okay. Now we're talking about per diem for an event or attendance at an event like
right.
a commission meeting or something like that. Or if an entire committee, legislative committee is involved, or I mean, now we're.
Madam Chair, representatives, the line that I've drawn there is if the meal is being prepared and they are there for the purposes of, you know, conducting a meeting, i.e. the Judiciary Committee went to the prisons. They were sort of a captive audience, if I might say.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
They, you know, part of their responsibilities went through the lunch hour, and therefore they were served a meal. And I believed that was within the guidelines. However, to use them as another example, is that they were invited. Every session they're invited by the Supreme Courts and the other court systems to have lunch with them for the purpose of gathering information. And because the courts at that time, we determined, did have an interest before the legislature, that now has changed because they are elected officials. But at that point in time, because it was really for them to have an opportunity to listen and have the courts sort of give them information as opposed to a gathering of information out at the prisons, I requested that the members pick up the tab on that lunch.
That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it goes back to within the scope of Ramona's good judgment. And one last question, I promised
yes.
we'd do.
Yes, and
11.
I promise it'll only take 3 minutes. Madam Chair, members, I have been getting a lot of requests on what fits within a publication or a pamphlet. And we've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. And I bring to you such books as this that's going to be coming available, The Career of Robert Newell, an Oregon Pioneer. And then also one that is produced by the tribes as informational as far as is the history of the tribes. And I came back to the fact that in our service supplies directive under House Rule 1601, you are allowed to use your state funds to subscribe to books, magazines, or purchase information through state dollars. And I am just wondering whether or not, if it would be something that would be allowed under House rules to be purchased by state dollars, whether or not that then would mean that if somebody wanted to gift that to you, as opposed to charging the state for that, whether that makes it appropriate or not. And I would look for clarification there. I think that I'm not sure where you want to go.
And I think that that's an important question. I don't think that we can resolve it in the next 60 seconds.
Okay.
And I think one of the concerns that I would have with defining it as what's allowed by the state services and supplies, would that mean that somebody could gift to my office a fax machine or a photocopy machine?
Well, Madam Chair, just to clarify that, first of all, you can't use service supplies to get yourself a fax machine.
Oh, okay.
Or a copier. So that doesn't fit within the guidelines of House Rule 16.01. So just for clarification there as an example. But again, I think it's something that we need to discuss, because I have been approached by various individuals as to whether they can give it for free or whether. And I've suggested at this point in time, if the members want to avail themselves to those publications, they need to have it paid for by state dollars, because it is approved there, and then the member makes a choice as to whether or not they want that or not as a piece of information they feel that they need in order to do their job.
All right. So we will take that up. The other issues at our next meeting, we're going to save the matters or business before the legislature until last, because that is the biggest discussion, and we can have it after we've made these other clarifications that will help these things not muddy the conversation about the business before the legislature. Our next meeting, we're going to focus on making remarks, participating in a panel, and what open to the public means, and how all of these things relate to legislator participation on panels and work groups for policy development, things like the Chalkboard Project, the Oregon Business Summit, when legislators are asked to be part of the formulation of ideas in a work type of a setting. So thank you for coming today. I believe we're meeting again next Thursday at the same time. We'll keep the meetings brief, and I appreciate your participation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, and Madam Clerk. This is a very unusual kind of meeting, and so far, I think we've done okay.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ramona, for I know that this has been a tremendous workload for your office, and I certainly appreciate the time and the effort that you've put into getting timely responses to members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. And based on the decisions that you came to consensus with today, I will be forwarding each one of you sort of that, my interpretation of those decisions, and get your sign off, and then we will make it available to all the members.
Great. Thank you. We're adjourned.